This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number three of Sharp Money here from the deep and beautiful downtown Las Vegas. Dave Ross, Jared Smith coming at you for one more hour here at the D. We were talking about the AFC East. Led to a very good conversation during the break.
I want to say the easiest division to handicap, but I am 100% convinced heading into the season, the worst team in the NFL resides in this division.
And that would be the Patriots.
100%, and that's a 4.5 under hammer win. I saw 5.5 at stations here. Very heavily juiced. How do the Patriots win in 6 games? But that's not really the crux of the conversation. I think because when you have an anchor like that at the bottom,
yep,
it allows you to take a 4-team race and boil it down to 3.
Absolutely.
And that just takes 25% of the handicap off the table.
We talked about it earlier in the program. Hopefully you heard us on Sharp Money here. We were talking about the NFC East and that no team is repeated as NFC East champion in 20 years.
It's the opposite for this division.
Right? You look at this, and we got a graphic for you, too. It's all Patriots, obviously with Brady and Belichick from 2014 to 2019, then all Bills from 2020 through 2023 for the last 4 years. And that obviously coincides with the emergence and the rise of Josh Allen. Now, as a Buffalo Bills backer and somebody that profited off them winning the division last year, it got dicey. Remember, this was the Dolphins' division to lose, and then they lost it.
Yep.
Right? Somehow, some way, kind of like the Eagles in the East last year, where the Titanic just absolutely hit that iceberg. Miami did that down the stretch and then blew the last game of the year against the Bills, so the Bills got that one seed in the AFC East last year. Oof, that's got to be tough for the Dolphins to shake. So when we break this down, and you're right, it's a three-team breakdown.
Three-team breakdown.
So we mentioned that Vic Fangio is now the adult in the room in Philadelphia. Anthony Weaver.
Who I love.
Yeah, me too. Takes over as the D coordinator in Miami. Mike McDaniels is the head coach. Look, I was in D.C. when he was on that staff. We didn't even know him in the media
who he was
at that point.
Nondescript.
Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan under Mike Shanahan back in those days. Who's this kid? Who's this dork?
Smart kid.
He's really smart. He's not a dork anymore, people.
No. Oh, I think he still is, but that's what makes him cool.
He's a savant.
Well, nerds are cool these days.
We're in
that era of
absolutely. And he's done a remarkable job with the offense. Now, can he be hands-off, and can Anthony Weaver make this defense hold up?
Like, they've got pieces on the defense. Like, there's no doubt about that. I think the Fangio thing, it's like a different strokes for different folks.
Yep.
I think the culture in Philly will be more receptive to the way he coaches.
Sure, tough.
Where, think about Miami. A little more
Blitz,
Miami Vice.
Glamour,
a little more loosey-goosey. Like, I just think, and that's part of it. That's part of the league.
Mm-hmm.
Each team, and I think when you establish this, that's when you transcend up to that next tier of franchises in the NFL.
Yep.
Not all teams have a culture. Certain teams do. The Steelers do.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, if you put a guy like Vic Fangio coaching a Steelers defense, it probably fits. If you put him in Miami, where, again, they don't have an established culture, it's a young head coach who isn't a disciplinarian, they look at the head coach and they say, how come this guy's wearing Air Force Ones and, you know, spinning around his whistle during practice, and I've got Fangio out here making us do up-downs every day? Like, it's just...
It's different. It doesn't fit.
It's a culture. It's a
locker.
I think in Philly it fits more.
And here's the thing, and again, I'm going to show my age here. I remember when Steve Spurrier was the ball coach in D.C., and there was a question. Marvin Lewis was the defensive coordinator under Spurrier in D.C., and they asked him. Bruce Smith was playing, the Hall of Famer now, and Mark Maskey, the Washington Post at the time, were standing next to each other at the media scrum, and Mark says, Coach, Bruce Smith wasn't at practice today. And Spurrier went, he didn't? Where is he?
Whatever.
He didn't know. And he goes, well, where is he? And then they go, he asks us, the media, where is he? And we go, we don't know. And he goes, well, somebody better go ask Marvin. The point being, I wonder if that's what Mike McDaniel is now. Is he like, all right, you guys go ask Anthony Weaver. I'm the genius of this offense. So, like, we keep talking about the Bills and Jets, and rightfully so. Can we look at that genius, that offensive genius, and that skill set? You saw it on Hard Knocks last year.
Yeah.
They want to get you out in space, and you try to slow this offense down. Now, look, Tua, whatever you think of Tua, he gets the ball out to his weapons.
I'm fine with Tua. Listen, I think all these quarterbacks that get a lot of crap, for the most part, it's all injuries,
yep,
which are all things that we can't control.
Yeah, I agree. And I look at them. They're an 11-win team last year.
They're really good. He was an MVP the first month, 2 months of the year.
So should we be looking down the board? I know it's 2-1 to win the division.
No, because you can't. You don't know if they're going to stay upright. That's the problem with the futures market in the NFL.
Which quarterback stays healthy?
Which quarter? It's almost in a trend. And they will never offer numbers on this because obviously the injury reporting and how they handle the injuries in the NFL is, I'll call it fluid.
Oh.
That's probably the only adjective I can think of right off the top of my head. I'm sure if I had time.
Transitory.
Maybe if I wasn't on live television, I could come up with more colorful adjectives that are a little more better describing the way they report the injuries.
Which would help us as bettors, yeah.
And there's a lot of, we'll call it gray area. So a lot of these bets in the NFL futures markets, they are games played bets.
Sure.
And if you were going to ask me, all in a vacuum. I say this word in a vacuum all the time, meaning the vacuum of space-time continuum is right here in this little circle. All three quarterbacks are healthy. Everything's hunky-dory. I think the Jets have the best roster in this division. I think the Dolphins have the most upside with the number because we've seen them play at a level where they could be priced first. We've seen the Dolphins play better at their peak than almost any team in the league minus that two-quarter stretch against Kansas City and Germany where they fell apart.
Right.
But besides that, they had the Chiefs, the defending champs, two-timers on the ropes. Big time on the ropes.
And that's why when we talk about it, look, I get it, Chiefs fans. They were the exception to the rule. They went, obviously, they beat the Dolphins in the first round in that Tundra game there in Kansas City.
Yeah, then was a weird game.
Right. Then they go on the road, and they win at Buffalo, and then they win at Baltimore, the number one seed last year. There is no team where the number one seed or winning the division is more important than the Miami Dolphins in the AFC. Period.
Yeah, I agree. The home field is very key for them.
It is. It's like we want you guys to be hot. We want you to sweat, and we want you to run with our athletes. They look fish out of water when they have to go to cold weather with that offense in January and December. So to me, like if I'm looking at 11-1 to win the conference, right, for the Jets and the Dolphins, same number there. Well, the Jets, I actually think, could get there as a wild potential. You don't want to go that route. They could get there as a wild. I can't see the Dolphins doing that. Mm. So to me, if you're going to bet that, you better bet the Dolphins 2-1 to win the division because they're not winning the conference if they don't have home field.
Yeah, and I like going offshoot there and going, you probably get a decent number for them to be the number one seed, probably better than them to win the division.
Absolutely.
And that's another way to look at these markets. That's the beauty of where we are in the NFL with the betting markets. You don't just have to bet the division. You can bet different ways. In fact, our buddy Will Hill made a great point about the Jets last week. If you do think they are going to win that game week one against the Niners, you don't bet them to win the division. You don't bet them on the money line week one. You bet them to be the last undefeated team.
There you go, because it gets really easy after that.
It gets so easy after that. So, again, that's why the schedule in the NFL is the most unique schedule release because it's I created this matrix that kind of shows how each team goes through their journey and when their tricky spots are.
Yeah.
And you can do that in only one sport, the NFL. Baseball, hockey, basketball. The schedule is so weird, and there's so many games. You can't map it out like this, but the NFL, you can.
By the way, I love that bet that you just alluded to. Miami to be the number one seed in the AFC is 10-1.
Compared to them to win the division 3-1.
Or to win the conference 11.
It's 11-1.
They don't have to play two more games. You just you get that one seed, you're in.
We think the AFC East is the toughest conference, the toughest division.
Three teams.
With two layup games.
Yes.
Which means unlike the AFC West, which the Raiders are not the Patriots. The Raiders are better than the Patriots. They have a better culture. I think they have a better quarterback situation. I'm not 100% sure of that. I think O'Connell, the conglomerate of O'Connell and Minshew are better than May and Brissett. I think the rest of the culture in Vegas is better. My point being, I think there's at least 3.5 teams in the AFC West. I think there's 4 teams in the AFC North. My point being, if you're going to win the AFC East, you're probably going to win 12 or 13 games. And that's probably going to be good enough to be the number one seed.
I would think so. And again, it would come down for the Dolphins. Can you play those, beat those Bills and Jets? If you win those, you're going to have a really good shot to get that number one seed.
I think 13 wins in the AFC gets to the number one seed.
Yeah, because the North is going to beat each other up.
The North will beat each other up.
That's going to be
brutal. The West, I think, will be more of a beat each other up than in prior years.
I like Harbs, obviously, to be able to push.
And you obviously love the Chiefs, and you obviously love the Raiders. I think the question is, how much you get from Knicks? That's the big question in Denver.
And the South, I don't think, maybe Houston could be a runaway freight train there.
To handicap the South, I think everyone's a 500 team.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I'm down on them. But I think people think they're a juggernaut. And if they are, they would be in play for a number one seed.
Tennessee, to me, is the one team that I could see a definitive fourth.
Yeah.
But I think Houston and Indy for sure. I think Houston and Indy for sure are 10 win teams. But I don't see a team winning 14 this year. I don't see the Chiefs having a dominant regular season.
Well, here's what's fascinating about that number one seed market that we're alluding to. So the Dolphins were mentioning at 10-1 is a better play in our estimation than the 11-1 to win the AFC.
Agreed.
Right.
And also, I think I'd rather play that to win the division because
totally.
To win this division, you're going to have to win at least 12 games.
Totally agree. Houston, by the way, is shorter. They're 8-1 to get the number one seed. So that's
because they probably play in a theoretically weaker division.
There you go. They're looking at the division.
But they have
saying,
a first place schedule. The Dolphins don't.
I like the Dolphins better at 10-1 than I would at Houston at 8-1.
You have to look at it in relative terms to the market.
Yep.
Where was Houston last year to be the number one seed? Like 100-1 probably?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, so you're asking a team that didn't achieve something last year to improve significantly, whereas with the Dolphins, we're just kind of asking for status quo, maybe a win better.
I think that's a good way to find value. Look at that number one seed.
You have to look at all the different markets.
Absolutely. Much better than just playing the conference or winning the division. So very interesting numbers there. When we come back, I do want to get back to Major League Baseball. I want to talk about some teams that we think might be able to play and make a run for the postseason. We're just about at the halfway point of Major League Baseball, so we'll discuss that next here on Sharp Money.
Yes, boys. Yeah, that was good.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
With our all-new NFL betting guide out now, there's never been a better time to become a VSIN Pro subscriber. So our all-new NFL betting guide is your secret weapon for the upcoming season. We got in-depth profiles of every single team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, betting trends. You're going to have all the tools you need to bet the season smart. Plus, our experts are going to share their top bets on season win totals, futures, props, giving you the insight you need to stay ahead of the game. So to get the guide, you got to be a VSIN Pro subscriber. So for a limited time, get an annual subscription to VSIN Pro for an unbeatable price. Normally $240 a year. You can get it for just $199 using the promo code SHARP. Plus, we're going to throw in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSIN Pro access to everything we do, which includes daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits, data, our all new special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all season long. Don't miss out on this NFL betting guide and this incredible offer. So visit VSIN.com/subscribe right now. Use the promo code SHARP. Get 13 months of VSIN Pro for just $199. Get access to our all new NFL betting guide. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Jared Smith, I am Dave Ross. We continue hour number three of Sharp Money. Major League Baseball is just about the halfway point. We're getting closer and closer to the All-Star break. There are numbers for teams that are right now on the outside looking in to get into the playoffs. Playoffs. Yeah,
love
we're talking
playoffs.
Playoffs. When I look at the National League, you know, if you go back 2 weeks ago, I'd say, oh, this division and this league is awful. We got stars with the Dodgers. We got star power with the Phillies and the Braves.
I like the Phillies a lot.
Do you?
Yeah.
And then I look at it and I go, well, do we trust Milwaukee? Sorry, why?
No, we do not trust Milwaukee.
I'm not, full disclosure, why I'm so different across the country and teams. I'm an Atlanta Braves fan, remember?
Oh, yeah. How did that happen?
My dad used to work for them. Well, he worked from 92 to 97.
Acceptable answer.
Oh, wow, that's a really good time.
Yeah, he worked for their minor league affiliates.
That's like saying you were working for, like, you know, Team USA basketball during the Dream Team. Yes. Like the early
90s. Did you guys
90s.
Have any success at all when your dad was there? So, all right, we'll let that slide. As you know,
Marquise Grissom was like the worst player on their team.
Hit ninth if they had the DH back then. So you look at those teams, and I assume that we all believe the Braves, if they can't run down the Phillies, will get that first wild card.
I like the Braves a lot too, actually.
Still,
if Freed's, I mean, they won the World Series with that Cunha.
Yeah, that's true. They did do that. People always forget that, by the way.
Yeah.
They are 2.5 games up right now for the first wild card spot in the National League. The Padres right now have a half game lead. The Cardinals right now would be in wild card spot number 3.
You just named the 4 teams that I think only are the 4 teams I would even consider winning the National League pennant.
Really?
Well, the Dodgers too, obviously.
Well, you're right, out of the wild card teams.
Yeah, I think Philly, Atlanta, St. Louis, L.A., San Diego. I think you can eliminate every other team in terms of contention to win the NL. And I know it sounds crazy. I think St. Louis ahead of Milwaukee. Just look at the lineup. I mean, you got really deep, talented young lineup. I think for St. Louis, that's improving. I don't know what the Milwaukee lineup. I can't even explain what. And I watch them every day. I cannot even explain the type of like clutch hits that they're getting on a day-to-day basis. It's really hard to sustain that over 162.
It is, but objection, Your Honor, for one team that we have not mentioned so far.
The Cubs?
Well, you know, Cubs, by the way, Cubs win again
Your
today.
Mets?
There we go. Those Metropolitans,
I'll
baby.
I'll give you my bear case for the Mets after you sing
your
praises.
Now, here's what I'm going to say.
I thought you were going to say the Reds there for a minute.
I do like the Reds a lot.
I love the Reds. Here's the thing about teams like the Reds. You know who the Reds remind me of? Last year's Orioles.
Ooh.
A team that's like
maybe
really good 1 year away. Now, we're at that point now with the Orioles where the 1 year away was last year. Now, we're at that year. But I still think the Reds are still, even if they get to the playoffs, the inexperience will show. Just like the Orioles last year against the Rangers in that wild card round.
Reds right now are 3.5 games out of a wild card spot. For the Reds to make the postseason, you get them right now plus 360.
They just swept the Yankees in the Bronx. Now, the Yankees are not the Yankees of April. I think the Yankees pitching staff is a notch below. I wouldn't bet the Reds to make the playoffs. I'd rather bet them to win the division, which is probably a longer price.
15-1.
Probably a better price.
I actually agree with that, Bryce. Yeah. It's something I've told everybody on the network, including Will Hill, that I do think the Reds will be live. They'll push them by the end of this year. Now, when you look at the screen right now, here's your yes-nos. You actually get some nos, which you got to lay it. But it is
at least they give us the no,
and we kind of like that. Those Metropolitans, let's get back to them.
Yep,
because they're number one right now on those teams that are not cemented in as one of the shorter prices to actually make it at plus money, plus 210 to make it in. I know 2 disappointing losses in a row to the Nationals this week. They're going to have Big Seb back in the mound. We talked about the game earlier against Paul Skeens. Here's my case for the Mets, and it's a simple 2-part equation. I call him Uncle Steve. Uncle Stevie.
He's going to open up the pocketbook.
Yeah, Steve Cohen has been on record saying he's not going to do that.
Oh.
But.
Well, that's not good.
But well, he said that before the year, right? Now, because Kodai Senga, of course, we lost him before.
Now there's a little more pressure, urgency.
You're in New York, Uncle Stevie. You've got money. It ain't mine. It's not yours.
It ain't mine.
It's his, right? So he doesn't mind spending it. So here's my thing. I'm not even asking him to buy in here at the deadline. I'm just asking him, don't trade away Big Sev. Don't trade away the Jeff McNeils. Don't trade away the Starling Martes. Don't trade away the Polar Bear, Pete Alonso, who's going to be unrestricted at the end of this year.
So that's the guy I'd be worried about trading.
See, I think
he's had a really disappointing season, I think, relatively speaking.
He has.
I bet he's over 41.5 home runs. He might not even get the 30.
Ooh. But see, that's the problem if you're going to bet the Mets. What does Uncle Steve do? Because I just named
five, six
tradable pieces that people would be clamoring for if you're a quote-unquote World Series contender.
The way that you frame that, I think, is perfect because I think VSiN pro tip for the day when you're handicapping the second half of the baseball season, sure, wins and losses matter, analytics matter. Handicap the front offices.
For example,
your Brewers, when they were in the race a couple years ago, traded away Josh Hader.
Ben Wilson's Brewers.
Sorry, you know what I mean, though. Yeah. The Milwaukee contingent over here.
Yeah, the Midwest.
When they were in the race 2 years ago, what did the Brewers front office decide to do?
Yep.
Now, to be fair, I'm always
That's the Hader trade you're talking about, right?
Yes. Okay. When they traded the best closer in baseball away in the middle of a pennant race.
Still stunning.
One of the dumbest things, because I don't know what, I forget what they got back. I don't know if they're on like the side of it.
Wasn't it like a closer for a closer?
I forget what it was, but it was Josh freaking Hader.
Yeah,
he was the best closer in baseball at the time. But my point being, they've at least somewhat reverse course. I like the Savali move they made this week. I think that at least will help with what is a rotation filled with Tobias Myers openers and please Freddie Peralta save us every fifth day.
That's what it is right now. They're putting it together with kind of glue and duct tape.
And their lineup's the same thing.
Yeah.
Look at past Adames at that lineup. I can't name a guy.
Well, that's why you'll get the Reds.
Christian Yelich.
Pass. Yelich, Contreras, Adames.
This shows
Jackson,
how I'm not a Brewers fan because I don't know the lineup.
That's
I was
what I'm
like,
saying.
Whoa, like, Christian Yelich.
That, now, don't get me wrong, but the Cardinals have that too. It's Goldschmidt, Arenado, Donovan, Gorman, and they got this young kid, Mason Wynn. And same thing with the Reds. India, De La Cruz, Steer. I think the lineup is the thinnest. I think the rotation is average at best. Well, I did add it with Savali. Here's the difference. The Brewers' bullpen is, I think, on par with the rest of the league.
Yeah.
And that's been the one thing that saved them right now.
Totally. And again, this is the month now that we're into July for which teams and front offices are going to be making the moves to either bolster or to move on from some of these guys.
I think the Brewers kind of told you that they're willing to buy
week,
which is a positive.
And a surprise, because when they dumped at the beginning of the year.
Historically speaking, they are not that.
They didn't expect to be in this spot. So some teams get surprised by where they are at this time of the season. The Reds with that young talent, I can't imagine they deal any of that talent away.
They better not.
Right? They got to hold pat. They've got a nucleus.
The Reds, I think, are a team that if they ever figure out the pitching, they're about as exciting as it gets.
Yeah, if Lodolo can come back, if he can be healthy.
They need Lodolo, and they need Hunter Green not to vomit all over the mound in the first inning.
That would help.
They need Lodolo to be more consistent. They need the guy who's pitching tonight, Carson Spears, who's actually looked pretty good, to give them consistent innings. They don't have the bullpen depth. That's the problem. That's where their arms run out.
Cubs at 7-1, and I know right now they're still in last place in that division, which is stunning, right? And they get their second win in a row today. As they beat the Los Angeles Angels of Orange County, California. So, like, can the Cubs, will they buy? Because I know that Northsiders.
This is not the year for the Cubs.
That's the thing. The prudent thing to do would be not to buy. But that fan base is like, why are we acting like a small market? Why do the Cubs act like a small market team in a big market? And that is the most perplexing thing to them, to that fan base. And I know that fan base very well.
The Cubs can't pitch.
Who do you
think
is
the problem?
Who do you think the Cubs are going to sell? Is it Bellinger's kind of?
Yeah, all those. Sure. All those. I don't know what the status is of guys like Horner and those guys. You know, those are younger guys. But Bellinger's the first one that comes to mind. Swanson's another one that comes to mind. Yep. Guys that are veterans that are probably on, you know, flexible deals. I actually wasn't giving the Reds bullpen enough credit. They're actually a top half bullpen this year.
Pretty good.
They're actually slightly ahead of the Brewers in terms of their expected FIP. Now, again, some of those numbers, they ebb and they flow. I'd say the Brewers maybe have a little more talent, but maybe they haven't pitched up to that talent this year. The Cubs are behind all of them. The Cardinals actually have the best bullpen per capita ex-FIP in the National League Central. I bet Cardinals pre-flop to win the division at 2-1.
I don't think you're dead.
I definitely am not dead. I'm trying to wrap my head around what the Brewers are doing, and I can't.
Wrap your head around what the Cardinals do at the deadline. That's a tough one.
They're going to add. They have to add.
Right now, it looks like you hold on to the Goldies and you hold on to the Arenados, and you see if you can make one push to try to catch. Why it's Brewers. Actually, he's a Braves guy. We're talking some hockey next with Jonathan Davis.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Before you make those daily wagers, check out VSiN.com. You're going to get your best bets, your betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, betting guides, each and every day. The perfect way to have some coffee, be informed, and make some wagers and cash some tickets. Back alongside Jared Smith, I am Dave Ross. We continue this edition of Sharp Money. Always love talking puck with our guy, Jonathan Davis. He is the host of Ice Cap on Sirius XM. Show Me the Money podcast. Follow him on X as I do at West Coast Hockey. That's HKY to round that out. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Jonathan, great to catch up with you now that we've gone through the draft. We've got free agency that's kind of, I don't want to say it's set in stone, but you get a better sense of what we think we're going to see this time next year. I can't believe it's already gone through a great Stanley Cup final as we saw. How exciting was that? Can you give us your short list of some losers before we get to the winners? Which teams do you think so far in free agency and or the draft did not help themselves out that you think maybe just missed the boat a little bit?
Well, I think Carolina, for me, would be the biggest loser of free agent frenzy day and the days that have since passed. And not because, you know, well, one, they didn't go out and get themselves a goalie where they need an upgrade for sure. But they lost two of their top six defensemen in Brett Pesce and Brady Shea. And then they lose one of their top forwards in Tara Teravainen. So they've just become a weaker team. And then, you know, you look at the teams around them, especially the New Jersey Devils, who were one of the big winners of free agent frenzy, got a lot better. So I think, you know, Carolina definitely took a step back. And the other thing, you know, the Rangers didn't really do much to improve themselves. Mm. And their coach, Peter Laviolette, always has a history of a great first season with every team that he joins. And then year two, they'll always take a step back.
I was hearing a lot of buzz from some people who I trust in the hockey spaces that the Devils are maybe a team we should be keeping an eye on. Bit of an aggressive approach to the end of last season. How do you think their offseason has gone so far? And they're pretty high on the list of teams on the Stanley Cup odds board that didn't make the playoffs last year.
They are, and they were, as I said, one of the big winners. You know what? I grabbed them early on July 1st at 40-1, and then it quickly dropped. I don't know. I saw it drop to 22-1 for the Stanley Cup. But I love what they did. You know, they made a trade before free agent frenzy. They answered their question in goal. They got Jacob Markstrom from Calgary. So that's a huge upgrade from what they had, you know, with Akira Schmid and Jake Allen and Vitek Vanacek and others. So they get themselves an elite goaltender in Markstrom. And then they add to the defense by getting themselves Brett Pesce and Brendan Dillon. So last season, they didn't re-sign two of their top defensemen. Now they've replaced the two defensemen they lost a year ago. They upgrade themselves in goal. And I think they're closer to that team that went well over 100 points 2 years ago, you know, and knocked the Rangers out of the playoffs.
Jonathan, we almost saw a redux of hockey history for a team down 0-3 in a Stanley Cup final to come all the way back and win it. I did not cover that 1942 Toronto Maple Leafs team. I know people think I did. What do you make of Edmonton so far in this offseason? I think you like what they've done. They're the shortest number on the board at plus 850. Can they get that one extra game that they need to actually hoist Lord Stanley's Cup next year?
I love what the Edmonton Oilers did because they kept the bulk of their free agents from this past, you know, their UFAs that they had to deal with. And then they added Jeff Skinner, a prolific goal scorer who was bought out by the Buffalo Sabres. And then they add Victor Arvidsson from the LA Kings. So they add themselves two forwards that can play in their top six. They keep their free agents from last season outside of Warren Fogle, who went to the Los Angeles Kings. I love what Edmonton did. They are definitely, you know, in position to get themselves back to the Cup final and deserving of to have the short odds.
Do we think the Florida run is kind of at an end here? They are obviously deserving the favorites or one of the favorite roles heading into next year. They've had two unbelievable seasons where they played up until the last breath. It's hard to sustain that. Do we think another year of Florida dominance is in store for us here in the Eastern Conference?
Well, yeah. I mean, we've had a team from the state of Florida for five straight years make it to the Stanley Cup final. Yeah, it's hard. It's a lot of games. You know, the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, have had a lot of success, but it is. It's, you know, you're playing what, close to 100 games, you know, each of the last two seasons. That's a lot of wear and tear on the body. You know, they lose a couple of players, mostly from their bottom six. I still think that they, you know, they lost one of their defensemen, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who had revitalized his career in Florida after some rough years in Vancouver and Arizona. They're still talking about moving one of their defensemen, Aaron Ekblad, one of their longest tenured players. There's still a lot of talent there, but yeah, there's mileage. There's a lot of mileage on this team. So they're still the most talented team. Now they've gone through the grind twice. I wouldn't look at them to necessarily win the division. I think for them, it's all about getting into the playoffs, kind of like what they've learned from their friends in Tampa. Just get yourselves in at this point. So I wouldn't put money on them right now. I think you're better off waiting until the season starts. Because I think, look, I'm not a Maple Leafs fan by any stretch of the imagination, but they did add three defensemen to their blue line, and they've improved that blue line. They get Anthony Stolarz, the backup goalie in Florida, to him and Joseph Woll will combine. So you've got they're better off. Toronto is better off. But at the end of the day, for me, guys, like, I still wonder if their best players hate to lose more than they like to win. Mm. And that's always my concern with guys like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner. They love to win. I don't know if they hate to lose yet.
You mentioned Toronto. I'm not a masochist. I'm not rooting for fan bases to suffer, but it looks like it's suffering. 13-1, by the way, for the Leafs to break that streak next year. What about right here in Vegas with the Golden Knights and Colorado? Now, they've kind of drifted a little bit. 13-1 for the Avs, 16-1 for the Knights. Is this because of the kind of the assertion now of Edmonton? Are they clear delineages here in the Western Conference? And would you say that Colorado and Vegas Golden Knights are properly rated where they are?
You know, I think in the case of Colorado, the concern is, guys, I think they've only got 16 players under contract. They're right up against the cap, so they're going to have to do a lot of cap gymnastics between now and the start of the season. In the case of the Vegas Golden Knights, I mean, look, they just lost one of the original misfits in Jonathan Marchessault. You know, depending upon which side you want to believe, the player Marchessault or management and Kelly McCrimmon, I mean, this was not a marriage that needed to end, you know, especially from Marchessault's standpoint. But the Golden Knights did their work at the NHL trade deadline when they added Thomas Hertl from San Jose and Noah Hanifin from the Calgary Flames. So Vegas is still three deep down the middle. They added also a guy named Victor Olofsson from the Buffalo Sabres, who used to carry the moniker of Victor Golovson in his first year in Buffalo. This is a guy that can score. So, well, you know, I think Vegas is still in a really good spot. Yes, they lost Logan Thompson, but that was a guy that my understanding, they just never really trusted, and they added Ilya Samsonov, who's gone from Washington to Toronto now to Vegas. I'm not a big Samsonov guy, but he doesn't have to be the man in Vegas, and he's playing in front of a much better blue line than he did in Toronto, where he doesn't have to win and steal games. So I like what Vegas has done. I still think that, you know, they'll challenge Edmonton for top spot in the Pacific. And they're definitely, you know, I think, the price on them for the Cup, it's not a bad number if you want to grab it.
Jonathan, last minute or so here, the awards markets are fascinating. So to win the Hart Trophy, Connor McDavid is basically like light years ahead of the field, plus 175. The next closest player, Nathan MacKinnon's at 7-1. But then you look at the top goal scorer market, and it's Austin Matthews in that top perch. And McDavid's kind of the third guy on the board at 5-1. I'm always interested in these discrepancies. Is Hart always top goal scorer, or is McDavid deserving of that favor? Because if you're just basing it off of goals, well, then you should look at Austin Matthews, right?
Well, look, 69 goals wasn't good enough for Austin Matthews to win the Hart. And I don't believe he was the best player in the NHL. I mean, I think Connor was deserving of the Hart. You know, Connor McDavid made a change to his game last year where he decided that, you know, it was more important to play a 200-foot game, play at both ends of the ice than to worry about scoring. So I think that, you know, at plus one, at 175, I don't think you're going to get, you know, much of a better number unless the Oilers get off to a really slow start. But yeah, most goals does not always transcend to most valuable player.
Only about 30 seconds, Jonathan. Utah Hockey Club, October 4th, debuts hosting the Blackhawks. I got to lay $1.75 on Utah. Is that good money? Is that a smart bet?
For what, for opening night?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Why not? with the money that VSiN pays you? Come on.
There it is, everybody.
That's the great way to end the segment right there.
Jonathan, you're the best. Thanks for joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Keep holding down California. Come back and see us in the desert, my friend.
Always, always a pleasure, guys.
Love talking puck with Jonathan. Yeah, you know, because I look at that and I go, Utah, I got to lay $1.75 on a team that doesn't
ever exist,
right?
This year.
But we saw what VGK did, right? So all of a sudden, sometimes there's some good juice. And we saw it with Seattle first year.
Something there in Salt Lake City, man. Maybe it's the salt in the water. Who knows?
Actually, they're a shorter price than Chicago to win that division. Sorry, wow. Blackhawks. Final touches here of Sharp Money next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. This guide is packed packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, which includes in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections for every single team, new quarterback, new head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide. Plus, we're going to have best future bets with our VSiN experts, which include MVP, the Roy, and the Coach of the Year awards. So whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit VSiN.com/guide. Get your copy of the all-new NFL betting guide and do it today. That's VSiN.com/guide. Back alongside Jared Smith, Dave Ross here, wrapping up this edition of Sharp Money. Had a great conversation with Jonathan Davis in the last segment. And I was talking as we were going to break about, you know, VGK with the success they had in year one, the Seattle Kraken, the success they had in year one. And now what we got, the Utah hockey team?
Doesn't quite have the same ring to it, huh, Wyatt?
That's what we're doing, Utah? I don't hate it, but it's like...
It was the Yetis was one of the names. I was like, dude, that would have been a perfect
Yetis would have been fantastic.
Well, you know what would have been funny for topical points if they were the Stanley Cups, you know, the popular cups that people are freaking out about now.
Right. The Utah Cups.
The Utah Cups. But that was just...
They would have warmed up to it.
To troll the actual Stanley Cup, which every time I have a friend that's like, I'm buying a Stanley Cup, I'm like, they don't sell those. You got to win one.
They don't give those out.
Yeah, but it's obviously this, this like weird mug that everyone's buying these days.
Why you have a discrepancy, if you will, in Utah starting off as a new frame. I know it's moving.
That's why, the Golden Knights and the Kraken were expansion teams.
Sure.
So obviously, it's everybody's coming together. They're playing for the first time ever. This is just a team that's
moving.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I wonder if that's an advantage or a disadvantage. Because you remember, everybody in the draft, when VGK started, they had to like keep guys exposed. Remember that? In that expansion draft? And that's why Seattle and VGK were able to get quality players.
Well, I remember when... The Golden Knights did their first the expansion draft. Everyone thought, oh, this roster's horrible. They're not going to do any good. And obviously, then they make it to the Stanley Cup their first year. And then people are like complaining, well, the expansion draft, they cheated. They had a fair chance.
I think it'd be better off if Utah was a true expansion versus keeping their crap players and bringing them over.
Then all the guys that are on the team is like, well, I just lost my job.
The success that the Vegas sporting franchises have had over the last 2 years, the Aces, expansion team, winning back-to-back.
It helps.
The Knights, expansion team, winning their first title.
No, the Aces moved.
Oh, they were moved?
They were in Texas. I think they were San Antonio.
I didn't know that.
But those are the... Yeah. I almost think it's more advantageous to be an expansion team.
I agree, because the rules are more in your favor.
They're trying to give you talent.
By the way, France moving on.
Viva la France!
And how about this for a statistic? So France wins this game technically 0-0. They give them a goal. It's like in overtime in hockey.
Yeah.
The game's 2-2. When you win the shootout, you get the goal. But... they haven't scored a goal in the run of play the entire freaking tournament. They've had own goals, penalty kicks. They're in the semifinals of the Euro. They have scored as many goals in the run of play as Dave and I have.
Do we have to fade them against Spain then?
You have to.
They haven't scored.
What on a team that hasn't scored in the run of play.
What a sport. You have not scored an offensive goal.
And they're in the semis.
Unbelievable. By the way, do we like the golden goal better back in the day where you had to play it out?
Golden goal's fun. The problem with golden
goal... You'd be playing all night.
Sure. So?
I think you need penalty kicks.
Penalty kicks are so dramatic.
I think you need to do like hockey does and remove players from the pitch and make it more open.
Okay.
Or... change the rules in some way.
Like, we need to open ice, like 3-on-3
hockey.
Because
you can't put a runner on second base like you do in baseball.
Oh, don't get me started.
Stack the deck because you can't play for 6 hours. You could legitimately... France has played, I think, 5 matches they haven't scored in the run of play. You might be playing all night.
By the way, with the ghost men on second in Major League Baseball...
you got to speed things up.
How about the Mets-Nats, the first two games of that series? They were dead unders. And all of a sudden, they put a ghost man on second, put Keggs in the outfield, and all of a sudden, it's 9-7 softball scores.
See, I think you do need to have an adjustment off of the full game totals that go to extra innings.
It's killing
because
unders.
The rules of the game
are different.
Are different.
Yes. that's that. Look, soccer, if you're purist and you don't mind this, then so be it.
What was the game last
weekend?
But
the rules are the rules, yeah. And that's, you make the bet knowing the rules. I just think they need to, just like every other rule, it's evolved. We're playing a different sport now than we're playing. You make an adjustment to the rules.
But if you bet an under in Major League Baseball, you hold your breath every time it's
that's
a one-run game.
Why I don't bet anything full game. Why do you think I stick to the first inning? Well, I know what's going to happen.
What was it last week, Giants-Dodgers? Went into extra innings and the Dodgers scored like eight runs.
Wasn't there a 10-5 game the other day? Extra innings, Astros, Mets.
Yeah, exactly.
Five runs.
Yes, that's the game that Gil won the Astros bet on.
4-4 under 8.5.
Dude,
all of a sudden, it's
a completely different game. By the way, speaking of,
see, I think it should be one. I think what should happen is here's how I would make the adjustment. Let the game play out the way that it is, but the final score that gets graded is just the one run, just like they do in hockey.
Oh.
They do a shootout, and they get the one goal. You could score 11 runs in the inning, but then the final score that gets graded is just 5-4.
I got an idea. How about we just play extra innings like we play the regular innings? But, how about we just do that?
But you still could have a 10-run inning.
You could, but it's much harder.
See, that's why in NFL, you know... Say, for example...
Oh, I hate the NFL overtime rules are the worst.
But at least you know.
We're playing 10 minutes for adults?
But at least you know.
We can't even play 15?
I don't understand why we can't do college.
Yes!
Sure, but in college, you know, it could go on forever, too.
But the kids, we can kill the kids, but the adults, oh, it's too much to play more than 10 minutes.
No. I think, at least in the NFL, you know there's never going to be more than, what, 9 points. That's the max that there ever will be in overtime is 9.
My first rule as your next NFL commissioner will be there will never be the prospect of a tie. I'm not going to sit there and invest 3 hours of my day, 3.5 hours of my day, and not decide a winner. It's the dumbest.
I'm okay with ties. How are you?
How are ties acceptable in the day and age? It should never exist.
As a Packer fan, I've had two ties, and you said, you watch it for 3 hours, you're invested, and like, I don't know how to feel. Like,
exactly.
We didn't lose, but we didn't win. Like, I don't know what to do with my hands here.
See, here's why
you
I'm
lose
okay
if you laid
the
two.
Yeah, right.
And there's no field goal.
Here's why I'm okay with the tie. It's the same rules for everyone. Like, everyone can tie. Like, you, and I've seen teams play for the tie. It's part of the strategy.
Oh, it's awful.
It is awful, but it's the same thing with the baseball rules. Like, just because we don't like the rule doesn't mean that it doesn't exist and everyone is on the same level playing field.
I agree, but I'll just tell you this, and I'll show you my age here. When Pat Dye was the head coach at Auburn, they played undefeated Syracuse in 87, and Pat Dye, we call him Pat Tye, because he played for the tie, and it was unbelievable. And by the way, they got rid of that the next year in college football.
The
kids get it right, and the adults get it wrong.
Yeah.
That is... Our society and sports, that should never exist.
I'd be okay if they got rid of the tie because I'm not one of those people who fear changes.
Yeah.
But I'm not, of all of the things that's wrong with the NFL, I don't think it's very high on my list.
Top of my list. Number one on my list.
So what is it when you become NFL commissioner, get rid of ties?
Yeah,
when you become president
really
of the United States?
One.
Yeah. Well,
then you're getting rid of
either president or commissioner.
All of the things, the tackling rules, all that stuff, the onside kicks, the ties, really the number
that's
one thing
number
that
one.
Sticks in your craw?
And if I ever become president, also I will eliminate ties in the NFL. So either way.
And time zones.
Time zones. Everybody's
what?
On the same
time zone?
We're on the
you're
same time,
crazy.
Baby. We're all on the same time.
Crazy.
That's how I'm running
so
for election
you want
right there.
To be
no
a
ties.
Breakfast game in the West Coast.
You are damn right. We can all figure it out. So if Wyatt
8
says
8 a.m. start times
hey,
on the
Dave,
East Coast.
Can you do the show at 8 a.m.? I know what time it is.
Pitch
I don't have
black,
to worry. Well, we have a guest from the East Coast, so that'd be no, it's just one time. Nobody farms anymore.
I didn't need another reason not to vote for Dave. I was just given one.
That's my platform.
That's
no ties in the NFL.
No time zone.
And one time zone. That's it. Very quickly, before we say goodbye, you've got some no-run first innings that you like.
Reese Olson is 16-0 to the Nerfy this year. Ooh. For the Tigers. Go figure. So we'll throw him and Carson Spears, that Tigers Reds one. Late, this one's steamed up, but I'll play it anyways because, listen, the price matters, but yep. I know people want action. It's the best game in the late-night session. You get Toronto and Seattle, Gausman, Castillo. I think Seattle's really an intriguing team. And I'll give you a crap game, Baltimore, Oakland. The crap game sometimes go Nerfy, Hogan Harris, and Albert Suarez, who's been really good in the first inning this year. So Baltimore, Oakland, Toronto, Seattle, and Cincinnati-Detroit. That is the three-leg nerfy lay on the night.
I realize now why you're cool with ties, because you basically want three games to be 0-0 after one.
That's preferred.
That's exactly what you want.
Nil-nil in the soccer world.
You could never be my running mate.
No, but you know what, though? We capture both sides of the market.
Actually, right? We'd be perfect.
We'd be diversity. We'd be perfect.
So again, just in summary, America, when Jared and I run, we're going to be running in a platform where no ties in the NFL, universal time zones, and no run first innings.
That's it. I'll be honest. Father of the first innings. Call me the founding father.
I love it. How can we lose, everybody? Why? A lot of fun, man. Thanks for putting together this show.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
And Jared, great stuff as always. Thanks for watching Sharp Money Cash and Tickets. We'll see you next time. We'll be right back.